Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller. Really pleased to welcome back Terry Schmidt, founder of the Wisconsin Gourd Society, self-described gourd girl, and we'll talk gourds for the next 90 minutes or so here on the Ideas Network. Before we get to that, I do want to say a big thanks to everyone who showed up for the listener dinner last night at the Mitchell Park Domes in Milwaukee. Those three domes are just absolutely gorgeous. And it was nice to have a kind of a private party there and dinner, which was wonderful, and a chance to visit with all the listeners who were there. I took a few shots with my iPhone and posted a couple on my Facebook page. So I hope you'll go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page and you can see what the domes, or at least one of the domes, looks like at night. And in the daylight hours, it's just an absolutely gorgeous place. And Melinda Myers and I had, and everybody else there had a great time talking with listeners. So next year, if that comes around, you better come, better show up. Okay. And I'm not sure if there are any gourds there, Terry.
I don't know. I'm looking at your pictures and they're just beautiful. And I wish I could have been there.
Oh, it was really, really a lot of fun. Well, you have some fun things coming up, too. You have the Gourd Festival coming up?
We do. We have the Wisconsin Gourd Festival coming up next Saturday, April 14th at Olbrich Botanical Gardens. Doors open to the public at 9 o'clock. It's open from 9 to 4. This year we have something new. Every year we try to expand a little bit for kids. And so I have to sort of take a step back here. Last year, we had an exhibit at Overture Center Galleries, the Wisconsin Gourd Society did. And I coordinated with the gallery coordinator there so that we could have some kind of class during the month that we were on exhibit. And so what we did was we had we offered two separate sessions of a class for kids where they could make a shaker, like a rattle, out of a gourd, decorate it and whatnot. It was an astounding success. It was incredible. In fact, we ran out of gourds. It was just incredible. It was very, very fun. The kids loved it. They learned a lot about gourds. It was really good. So this year at the festival, we always have a kids area. And like I said, every year we're trying to grow a little bit. So we're going to have that happening for kids. There's a minimum charge of $5. We try to keep it down. It's only for material fees. Mm-hmm. And kids do have to be accompanied by a parent.
Sure.
The classes are in the afternoon, 1:30 and 2:30. And it would be wise to register ahead of time just in case, especially now people are going to hear about it and they're going to want to go.
Yeah.
If you're interested in bringing your child, you can contact Deb Reddy, and her email is gourdready@gmail.com. And that will be on the Wisconsin Gourd Society site. So if anybody goes to wisconsingourdsociety.org, if they go there, they'll be able to find information on that as well. And so kids will, they'll have an hour to work with volunteers and their parents to create these little rattles. And then we will have the Moldy Jam Group playing bluegrass music. And they always, or old-time music, they always encourage kids to participate.
Oh.
So they can take their little rattles and go over and hang out with the musicians and have some fun.
So now what age for the kids?
5 to 12.
5 to 12. Okay,
yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's a pretty good-sized group.
Yeah.
And, you know, and after they actually make it, then we have all kinds of stuff for them to use to decorate them. And the decorations are, it's worth seeing. It's always a lot of fun to see what they come up with. So, yes.
I am going to have to check because our daughter, Emily, falls in that age range. I want to see if I've got to try and remember what we have scheduled for next Saturday, right?
Saturday, a week from tomorrow.
That'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun. The other thing we have at the kids' table this year is, and I kind of stole this from the Arizona show, we have an alphabet of gourds. And so it's just a display of, by alphabet, all the gourds that we can fit into the alphabet. And then some things that aren't exactly gourds because there weren't words for those letters. And then we'll have some hands-on gourds as well, so they can see, like, an apple gourd really looks like an apple, or a cannonball gourd looks like a cannonball.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that's kind of another really good learning thing for them, and it'll be good for them.
You know, maybe we should go back and just talk about what gourds really are. They're not really, for the most part, I don't think they're edible, are they?
Well, it's very interesting. They can be. They can be. And in fact, I was just reading, because last night my husband and I were talking about, could we do something to entice people to call in and answer a question?
Mm-hmm.
And so we were thinking, well, what could we do? What could we, you know, what could we ask? What could we come up with? And somewhere along the line, it got dropped. But so this morning, I was reading, and I do have a question, and I'll pose it in a little bit. But gourds are edible in a certain state. Certain types of gourds.
Mm-hmm.
They're cucurbits. So members of cucumber, melon, pumpkin, all of those are the same family. The difference between a gourd and any of those fruits, though, is that when it's mature, it actually is, it's basically water. It's extremely bitter. And in its most mature state, it becomes a wood-like product.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mold and get soft and die like a pumpkin will over time.
Does
although some of them do.
Some of them do.
Yeah. But if you have a really mature gourd, it won't. It turns into a hard product. And so... So they're usually mostly used as vessels, and historically, culturally, they were used as vessels, and still a lot of cultures use them when they fish. They put their fish in them, and they carry water. And South America, they're still used as water carriers for farmers, and because they keep everything at a nice temperature, they're insulated in its in their own way, so your water stays cool out in the field. And a lot of farmers still use them. A lot of people still use them. A lot of people who have come here from South America buy our gourds to use in the fields to carry their water.
Very cool.
And then they're also used a lot for musical instruments, guitars and fiddles and banjos, the original
and
banjos.
You've made instruments yourself.
Yeah. In fact, at the festival, one of the music groups that is there in the middle of the day, a fellow named John Vivier from Ghana and Tani Jakite from Mali. And Jam is a phenomenal woodworker, and he also builds balafons, which are like a xylophone. And but the keys are made out of a specific type of wood, and the resonator resonators are gourds.
Oh.
And so Jam, this is how I actually met Jam. He came to our house looking for gourds to build some balafons for kids at Folklore Village.
He does, sure.
Yep,
yes.
He does a class out there. And so in exchange for the gourds, he taught me how to make a balafon. So I have a wonderful balafon at home. And, you know, banjos. We have a gourd banjo made by a guy here in Madison, Scott Nickelbein. And I haven't made my own gourd banjo yet, but I will. So lots of drums. We do a lot of drums. So
Terry Schmidt, founder of the Wisconsin Gourd Society, self-described gourd guru, a girl. You said gourd girl. I think gourd guru is pretty good, too.
Well, do you know what? It's funny you said that, because I forgot to bring this for you. In the Country Today newspaper, Jim Massey did an article on us just last week, and he called us the gourd gurus.
Ah!
We've never heard that before.
Well, gourd gurus, that's great.
Yeah, it is.
That's a nice handle
to have.
Might have
to change our name.
If you have a question or comment for her, Do you consider yourself a gourd guy or a gourd gal? I hope you'll join in, maybe with questions about growing them or what to do with them. Or also, I'd love to hear how you use them in your own life, in your own living. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. I hope you'll go to the page today. You'll see the couple of shots I took from inside one of the domes last night at the listener dinner. And we also, while you're there, we have a link to the Wisconsin Gourd Society site. So you can go there to learn more about the upcoming event this coming weekend. Actually, it'll be Saturday, April 14th at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. So lots to see and do while you're at that event. And let's talk a little bit more about that, Terry, because you mentioned there's kids things and there's music.
We have tons of stuff going on. Friday, the 13th, the doors will be open from 1 until 5 p.m. for people who are interested in bringing their artwork for the competition. Our competition usually brings in 100 to 150 pieces of art. And we have categories for all levels of artists, children, all the way up to master gourders. And so if you have a child who is interested in doing art and has made a little birdhouse or something, you know, you can bring it. It costs a couple bucks to put your piece in the competition. And there are lots of ribbons that are handed out in the first, second, and third place for all categories, plus the judges do their favorite, plus the president does her favorite. And it's a pretty big event. And for those who are interested in just getting inspiration, this is the place to do it. So you can drop off your pieces on Friday at Olbrich, and then the display will be up all day on Saturday. So that's usually one of the most popular things, and that's held in the atrium there at the festival. We basically have the entire gardens, not the outdoor
beautiful
gardens,
place
but
as well.
Right, but the building. So all of our vendors are in the commons, which is the sort of the back room as you go straight through the lobby. Our membership and music is in the lobby, and then the atrium is going to have a couple of classrooms, the kids area, the competition. So that's all over there in the atrium. So just it's important for people to know that there's something in both rooms, because sometimes people come in, they don't realize, they'll go to one spot and they don't realize that it's all over the place. So yeah. So competition is on Friday, and that's a big thing, and it's just gorgeous. We have some phenomenally talented artists in Wisconsin and in the Midwest. So we have that going on. Our classes this year, we have five classes going on. Regina Riley, who's from Iowa, is a great basket maker. And she is going to teach a basketry technique on gourds with pine needles. Gary Qualheim is a very well-known gourd carver in Wisconsin now. His mother was a rose mulling artist, phenomenal rose mulling artist, and he basically carves rose mull on gourds, and it's just beautiful. And then Wes and Jill Nelson from Illinois, they do an easy-to-clean gourd birdhouse class, and they do that every year. And Wes is also a fourth-generation beekeeper. And so he'll have honey at his booth as well.
Oh, great.
And I got to say, Wes's honey is it's top-notch. It's very, very good honey. And then wire-wrapped luminary with Kathy Frosch Hallenbrand. She'll be doing that. And it's a sort of gourd cutouts. And then you use, I think it's sea glass or something, and you wrap that onto the gourd. And then I'm teaching a class called Coiling with Agates. And so we'll take a prepared gourd and we'll coil what's called pygmy palm that I gather when I'm in Arizona. We'll coil that around the agate and coil it around the gourd and then lash the two together. And it's a gorgeous piece, very nice piece. So five great classes coming up.
Sounds wonderful. You know, you mentioned birdhouses, and I think Jan in Mineral Point has a question about birdhouses. Let's go there. Hi, Jan.
Hi. My question is, what would be the best types of gourds for birdhouses, and can you tell me a little bit about, you know, how to grow them, how easy they are to grow, and just how to dry them for the birdhouses?
Sure, no problem. The best ones for birdhouses are bottle gourds, what we call bottle gourds. And so it has a sort of a ball in the top and then a smaller neck and then a ball at the bottom. And they come in various sizes. The thing about birdhouses is you want to make sure that you don't have a house that's so big that the birds don't want to go in it, because they got to move the furniture in. And, you know, they don't want to build the nest for a giant birdhouse if you're talking about a wren. you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If you keep your birdhouse to maybe, you know, 6, maybe 8 inches in diameter, that's the max. 6 inches in diameter is a nice size for a wren. And then when you make your birdhouse, you want to make your hole size appropriate for the type of bird that you want to get. And you can find that information online. Mm-hmm. And then put holes in the bottom of the birdhouse so that there's drainage. You can hang it any way that you want to hang it. And then how to grow. If you're in Mineral Point, you probably have a good growing season. So, you know, you choose your seeds. You can get your seeds anywhere, Jung's or, you know, Farm and Fleet, any place local. Mm-hmm. And just get them in by, you know, May 15th maybe. And keep an eye on them. Water, water, water in the beginning. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling, Jane.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Talking today with Terry Schmidt, founder of the Wisconsin Gourd Society. I'm Larry Mueller. Brittany DeAnda, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking gourds today, those glorious gourds, with Terry Schmidt, founder of the Wisconsin Gourd Society. Thank you for listening in. Give us a call with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page, post there at The Larry Mueller Show. And frankly, I'd love to see if you've got, maybe you've done a little artwork with your gourds and you've got a photo or two you want to share, or maybe it's a cool photo of a gourd. I hope you'll post that at The Larry Mueller Show so we can share it with everybody. So, Jenny and Tomahawk with us next. Hi, Jenny. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Thank you for answering my phone call.
Sure.
I always enjoy Larry Mueller.
Thank you.
I would like to know how to dry a gourd. Every year I try to dry gourds, and I buy 3 or 4 at the grocery store, and slowly but surely they mold. And I keep throwing, you know, one out at a time, and then I get to the last one, I think, well, this one's going to dry. And because it seems to be partially dry, and then it's wet, you know, then it molds to mildews or whatever. So how do I dry a gourd?
Okay, well, drying a gourd is a lot easier than it looks, I think. So I think the key here is that you said it molds, and the other key is that you said you buy them in the fall. So there's two things here. When a gourd is drying, it should mold. As long as it's hard, it's still a good gourd. Because when we pick a gourd, it's 98% water. And it slowly sweats, basically. And if you sweated for 6 months, you'd be moldy too. So you get moldy. It gets moldy, right? So it's supposed to get moldy. It shouldn't get mushy, but it should get moldy. Now, the other thing is that if it gets moldy and then gets mushy, you said that you buy them in the fall. So you're probably buying the green gourds like at a market or a pumpkin stand or something. A typical hard shell gourd has to go through at least one hard frost before it's mature. And even then, going through a hard frost doesn't necessarily mean it's going to make it. My husband's the largest gourd grower in Wisconsin, and he probably loses about 50% every year.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a long season vegetable. So if we get them in the beginning or middle of May, we're lucky that we get half. That we get 50% of them in October. They're 90 to 140 day plants, depending on the size of the gourd. So, but the best way to dry it, we leave them outside. Just leave them outside.
Do you leave them in the field?
Yeah, yeah. We'll put them up on pallets. Sometimes, if he has some really big ones, he'll put them in a barn. But he moves them around enough so that he can clean up the field. But he leaves a lot on pallets just right out in the field, and some he takes down by the barn. But most of them, he likes to leave them outside. They dry better. They dry a lot better. So,
Even in the rain?
Yes, in the rain, in the snow, the whole everything. That the weather, the elements help to break down that skin so that in the spring when it is dry and you go to clean it, that stuff just comes right off. It's a lot easier than if you leave them in a garage or inside of a barn or an outbuilding where they're not being hit by the elements. Those elements are good.
I'll be darned.
Yeah. And in fact, you don't want to have them like in a basement or in a garage that's attached to your house because it's mold and you don't want that in, you know, it's not good for you to be around you. So you actually do want to dry them outdoors.
So you can just leave it outside.
Absolutely. Yep. We have...
Is it better off the ground?
We put some on pallets, but not necessarily. The gourd guy believes that there's something in the soil that actually helps to dry them. He thinks the soil kind of just sucks that water right out of them. So, you know, we pick them, we put them on a pile, and some are on the ground, some are on pallets. We don't notice a difference between the two.
Well, that's wonderful news, because I've always... put them, you know, in the house.
Yeah, that's not a good thing. You don't want that mold around you. So, yeah, try, you know, if you get them next year, if you do the same thing, get them late at the farmer's market. Don't get the early ones because those have been picked early anyway. You want to get them as late as you can. And then just leave them outside. Let them mold. Yeah, by March, they'll start to feel pretty light. And then you can clean them.
How do I clean them?
We soak them in water with a little bit of bleach. It's not a particular percent solution. Just put some bleach in there to help kill the mold. And then we use a metal pot scrubber and just scrub the mold off and then let them dry in the shade. If you put them in the sun, they often will crack. So you want to let them dry in the shade where it's cool.
Well, the things that one should do sound exactly opposite of what
well then you
know.
Then you know, Jenny, next year you're gonna have such great luck.
Thank you so much.
All right,
thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mealer Show. You can post a question, a comment, or a photo right there. Let's go back and talk some more about growing gourds. Is it pretty much like, I don't know, zucchini or anything else?
Like a pumpkin.
Like a pumpkin.
Like a pumpkin, yeah. So you need to get them in early, preferably plant them in hills. But you can't get them in too early. You want the soil to be warm enough. You know, for us, we're on a large scale, and so we make, you know, like a row of hill, basically. Mm-hmm. And put the seeds in. And if it looks like it's going to get chilly, we cover them. You know, we just have rows of plastic and we'll just cover them until any... I mean, a lot of times we'll have them germinated and up and then we have to cover with Wisconsin weather. You never
early.
Know. Yeah, right. I mean, this year, boy, it's tempting. It's really tempting to get... I mean, we have a lot of our vegetables in, you know, already, so...
Yeah.
We may be crying, but, you know,
yeah,
later,
I was talking to somebody last night who put 100 Vidalia onion sets out.
Yeah?
That week that it was 80 degrees.
Oh.
They're not looking so good right
now.
Yeah,
they're not happy right now. But this is the weekend to put the potatoes in, isn't it?
I think so.
Mine are going in, so.
So it's got to be the right weekend. 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions or comments. Let's talk about the different types of gourds and how they're used. And what do you guys grow?
Okay.
So
all right. So the Lagenaria siceraria, that's a hard shell gourd, the typical hard shell, what people would call birdhouse. Oh, my gosh. I have no idea how many varieties there are. Probably 80, maybe more. Yeah, there are a lot of different varieties. And every year more because people are creating different hybrids from cross-pollinating, intentionally creating things. So there are a lot of those. We might grow 15 to 20 varieties in a year, and it depends on the year. Some years we'll want to grow just specific types based on what our inventory is, and other years, you know, there'll be an interest in something different, and so we'll go with that. And then, so that's the hard shell. And then you have the ornamentals, which are Cucurbita pepo. And those are like the little orange and green things you see around Halloween, little spoon-shaped or eggs, crown of thorns, that kind of thing. And there might be 15 varieties of those. We probably grow 3 or 4. Tennessee Spinner is the most popular one. That's a it's an ornamental gourd that is shaped very much like a little Christmas tree ornament. And they can be very small. They can be less than 2 inches tall, and then they get a little bit bigger from there, but not a whole lot bigger. They're pretty small. So they're used a lot for jewelry and for tree ornaments. Yeah.
So you actually paint them and stuff like that.
Yeah, and hang them. And then there's loofah, which a lot of people think loofah is a sea sponge. It is not. There's a difference between a sea sponge and a bath sponge, loofah. So loofah is the longest season of the gourds. It's a 140-day plant. Very, very hard to grow. We do grow them every few years and, you know, gather up our booty, and then we don't grow them again for a couple of years till we need to. Of the types of gourds, the loofah is the most beautiful. It's an astounding plant. It's just gorgeous with green, silvery leaves that have a dark green lines through them and bright orangey yellow flowers. Very, very pretty. And they're daytime flowers. So are the cucurbitas, the ornamentals, are daytime flowers. Whereas Lagenaria, hardshell gourd, is a nighttime flower. So it opens around 4 in the afternoon. It might stay open till noon on a cloudy day, but usually they're closed by about 10 in the morning. So in terms of pollination, there's no proof, but word is out that it's probably night flying moths that do the pollinating, not because they're after the pollen, but because they are attracted to the light of the white flower that's reflected by the moon. And so that's what brings the moths to them. But then daytimes when they're still open in the morning, you have those darn squash bugs and cucumber beetles. And so we have to let them pollinate a little bit. You know, but then we do hand pollinate a lot. So those are the types, the most common types.
So the loofah, so you only grow those every few years?
Every 2 or 3, yeah.
They're so hard to do.
They're very hard to grow. You can't put them in until like June. They you have to have warm weather. So I start them indoors, which we don't do with the other gourds. I start them indoors, and then when I do put them out, I cover them, even if it's warm, just to bring the temperature up. And they have to be trellised, whereas other gourds don't. They're very high maintenance gourds. We usually get our first frost the middle of September. We cover them to keep them from the frost, because then we'll have our second, our little Indian summer.
Yeah.
And so we'll have our warm spell. So we get about an extra 6 weeks by keeping them covered. And once we cover them in the fall, we just keep them covered. It's just a hothouse under there.
Oh, so you do what, a clear plastic or something?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So we just keep them hot. And they're gorgeous. And they're very, very beautiful. And if you can get them to mature on the plant, they look like a zucchini, but 3 times the size. Very, very big.
Wow.
And they hang down on the trellis. And then when they're mature, the bottom opens. It kind of pops open and the seeds fall out. And then you can pick it and peel it just like an orange. The skin comes right off. And here's the thing about loofah that is phenomenal. I think loofahs are made for artists, because there's a shade of green that you don't see anywhere else in nature except under the skin of a loofah for just a split second until the air hits it. So when you peel it, it's this incredible shade of green, like a pastel lime in a way, and then it changes to brown when the air hits it. But for a moment, it's kind of like when you see a falling star. You always go, did I just see a falling star? The same thing when you peel a loofah, you go, did I just see green? You know, yeah.
It's once you've peeled it, then is it, what do you do with it?
It's ready.
It's ready.
It's ready. It'll dry, and it might take a day to dry if you just hang it outside. I hang it like on a clothesline. I just hang them up, and they're dry in a day or maybe a day and a half. And then I let them sun bleach because there's the aesthetic thing to it. You know, people don't want to bathe with this brown thing because it does turn a shade of brown. It's not dark brown, but it's a tan. And so if I just leave them out in the sun, they lighten up a little bit. And then I usually cut them in half or thirds and sell them as bath sponges because they're so long. You don't really need a, you know, a foot and a half.
As they're growing, and this might be just in general for the other gourds too. I was thinking last night in the domes, it was smelled so wonderful, and I was wondering about the smell of the aromas that we get from the gourds.
They're stinky.
Yeah,
oh,
I wondered
my gosh,
about
they're
that.
Stinky. But you know, I thought about this last summer. There's a where one we rotate our fields, and so there's one particular field that's along our driveway, and I walk our driveway is a half mile. I walk it every morning, every night with my dogs, and at the top of summer when you've got that humid dog days thing going on, and in the evening the gourd flowers have opened, you have this pungent odor. It's incredibly pungent, and it's really strange because when you have two or three plants, it's stinky. But when you have 1,000 plants, it's almost like magnolia. It's so incredible because it goes from being crummy, pungy to being like sickeningly sweet in a way.
Ah.
Yeah, it's very weird in large amounts like that. They don't have a good smell, you know. But there is one. This is going to be my question for the day, if anybody knows. There's one type of gourd, and I didn't name the type in those other ones that I named. It's one that we don't talk about very often. There's one type of gourd that has, it's a night bloomer, and it has a fragrant flower. There's only one.
Mm.
Yeah.
And what is it?
What is it? And I'll tell you at the end of the day if nobody has figured it out.
If you know the answer, we should give some sort of little prize.
Sure. If you can guess it, we'll give you a gourd at the festival, but you have to come to the festival.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. But we can't give you that particular gourd because I have only one.
And you're not giving that one up.
I'm not giving it up. I'm not. No.
All right. That sounds like a good prize to me. So you can join in. Maybe you've got the answer to that one type of gourd that's a night bloomer that really smells great.
Yep, it's got a sweet smell.
Got a sweet smell. What is it? So you can call in with that or with the answer or potential answer. Or if you just have a question or comment about gourds and raising them, I hope you'll join in as well at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Again, you can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show. And let's go to Dot in Manitowoc. Dot, hi. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. It's nice to talk to you. I have grown gourds, and I have dried them outside all winter long. But be aware. Take them in before the squirrels start picking at them, and also other wild animals. This is what I have experienced. I grow the gourds all summer long and harvest them, put them out to dry, and then all of a sudden, if I don't take them in at a certain time, those little critters will start eating at them, and then you'll say, oh, dear, I should have gotten them before the squirrels got them.
That's excellent advice, actually, which is we're at an advantage on our farm because we have so many. But you're right. On a small scale, you have to be careful. If you're in one of those squirrely neighborhoods, even the same with your birdhouses, you hang your birdhouse in a tree. If you have a squirrely neighborhood, I've heard people complain about the squirrels eating their birdhouses. And what they're really doing is they're going for any seeds that might be inside.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Mice, too.
Well, I haven't ever seen what critter was at it. Mm-hmm. But I'll say, oh, shucks. Mm-hmm. I should have gotten them the day before they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have, of course, like I said, piles of gourds outside. And we have a black lab. And he will go through the piles and pick up a gourd and just chew on that thing until he gets the mouse out of there.
How about that?
So, I mean, the gourd's already bad anyway because the mouse made a hole. So,
yeah,
you know, so may as well get rid of the mouse.
Get rid of the mouse. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. I'm thinking of getting my, well, I have gourds started now in the house.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm, of course, waiting for the soil to warm so that I have a crop.
Yep. Well,
and,
good
and
luck.
And what's the soil temperature again? About in terms of
preferred
time?
Temperature is above 50.
Above 50.
Yeah. For loofahs, it's got to be 70.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I don't put them out till June.
Oh, yes. Right. Good advice.
So what are you growing this year, Dot?
Well, snake gourds, bushel gourds, and dragon gourds.
Mm-hmm.
So I have them started, but we'll have to wait until nature tells us it's time to put them outside.
There you go. Be patient.
Oh, that's hard to do.
Yeah.
It is. Thanks, Dot.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the call. Oh, man, great. And lots of callers online here. You can still join in with your question at 1-800-642-1234. Talking with Terry Schmidt, the Gourd Girl, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in on this edition of Garden Talk, Talking Gourds with Terry Schmidt, founder of the Wisconsin Gourd Society, self-described gourd girl. She's a gourd guru as far as I'm concerned. She knows a lot about gourds, pretty much everything you could ever hope to know, I think, and certainly here to answer your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. And Joanne in Green Bay, we are turning to you. Hi, Joanne. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a kind of an answer, maybe, possibly.
Okay.
For the sweet-smelling gourd blossom.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Okay.
Could it be a calabash?
No, it's not.
Darn.
I'm sorry. But, you know, let me talk about calabash for a second. Calabash is used in a lot of different ways. It's the term typically just means gourd in general.
Yeah.
In other languages, calabasa, it's in general gourds. But in Africa, there's a tree called the calabash tree.
Mm-hmm.
And on that tree grows what we would call a calabash or a gourd. It looks like a cannonball gourd. It's round. It's extremely woody. And it's the fruit of the tree, but it grows right on the arm of the tree, right against it. It doesn't have like a stem. It grows right against
it.
Right on it. Almost like a gall. Looks like a gall. And they pick these off, and then they drill through them. There's a nut at the very center, and they eat this nut. And then what's left over, this big ball, when they drill through it, once you drill through it, you can pound on it, and it's a resonator. And so they're used in musical instruments. Yeah. Also in Vietnam. They grow in Vietnam, and they're used in musical instruments in Vietnam.
Well, that's why I thought that it might be that, because you said you only had one. Mm. I know it was from a long ways away.
Thanks, Joanne.
Good try.
Thank you very much. I love your show.
Appreciate it very much. Irene in Sun Prairie. Hello.
I think the answer to your question is a birdhouse gourd.
No, it's not. It's not that easy.
Oh.
A birdhouse gourd is just a regular gourd, and those flowers really don't have a lot of smell.
They do in the evening.
Well, they do, but it's that pungent, icky smell. It's not. It's not the. It's this is
I
not
found
a
it
sweet.
Enjoyable.
Yeah. Oh, did you? Oh,
yes,
well.
I
guess
it's all to your nose.
That's exactly right. Thanks for trying.
But I appreciate it. Oh, and birdhouse gourd, that's sort of a general again, isn't it?
It is. In fact, though, nowadays you can find in some of the flower centers or garden centers packets of gourd seed, and they call it birdhouse gourds. But that really is a mixture. It's just a mixture of various types of seeds. There is no specific birdhouse gourd.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there's more people who have some potential answers here. Alex in Black River Falls, let's turn to you. Hi, Alex.
Hi. I think I have the answer.
Let's see.
Pumpkin squash.
Nope, it's not a pumpkin squash. Sorry.
Is a pumpkin squash a gourd?
A pumpkin squash is probably more like a pumpkin, but there is a an ornamental pumpkin gourd, which is very small. It's like a miniature pumpkin.
Oh. And
so there actually is a pumpkin gourd.
And when do they come out at, do we have them, see them at Halloween time then? I'm trying
Sometimes,
to
Sometimes, depends on if you grow them. You know, local growers, we don't grow them very often. We grew them one year by accident, actually. We bought apple gourd seeds in.
And there were some pumpkins in there?
They were all pumpkins. Ah. And that happened all around the country. I had so many calls from people that grew apple gourds and got pumpkins. Pumpkin gourds. But yeah, so it's not a pumpkin squash. Sorry, Alex, but thanks for trying.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. You know, I'm trying to think of the profitability here. If you're in the business of raising gourds and you've got these little gourds, you're not going to be able to charge a whole lot of money for these gourds and for all of the work. This is, you're probably not going to be a millionaire.
Mm. Well, there you have it. you're right. We don't charge a lot for our gourds.
Don't.
And there is everything about growing them is manual. There's no way to plant them in an automated way. There's no way to harvest them in an automated way or to clean them, although some people clean them, you know, by using power washers and water troughs. But that kind of bangs them up and ruins the end.
The
stem. It does. And artists want those. They want the stem. So we really have to clean them manually. So, you know, for the amount of time that you have to put into it now, you're under minimum wage. So if you want to do it as your business, you have to do it because it's your passion. And that really is why we do it. My husband loves gourds. He just loves what he does as a gourd farmer. And, you know, He's good at doing it the way he does it. So,
and that's you know, you guys, that's how you guys met. We've talked about this in the past, but I know it's such a lovely story. It's worth repeating.
Are you sure? Okay, here we go. I moved here from California in 2003, and the second week I was here, a neighbor told me that I needed to go to the farmer's market. So I went downtown to the farmer's market and I walked around, and here was this guy with a gourd, and I didn't know what it was, but there was no one else at his stand, and I was too embarrassed to go up and ask what it was. At the time, I was studying music at the university, and I heard him shake it, and I thought, like no one else had thought of this before, I thought, wow, I could write music using this. This is it, because my degree's in composition. And so the following weekend, when I went up to the market, there he was again, and there was a family in front of me who walked up to his stand. And so he was explaining to them what these were. And so I just pretended like I was with the family and listened, and they eventually walked away, and there I was. And so we started talking, and as we were talking, the sun was in my eyes, and he put his hand up to block the sun. And I thought, wow, that was really a considerate thing to do. And it's all history after that. I saw him week after week after week at the farmer's market. And a year and a half later, we got married.
One gourd led to another.
One gourd led to another, right. And I still have the gourd I bought from him. I bought a gourd that week. And I know what I paid for it, but he always says that he gave me a discount. He says he charged me differently. So. Maybe he did.
Oh, I love that story.
Thank you.
Laura in Trempolo, it's your turn. Hi, Laura. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Good morning, still at least. Hi. I'm trying to help out my brother. He's getting married October 13th this year, and he asked for a project for my children to grow some white gourds or pumpkins to have as decorations around there. And so I was wondering if you have any suggestions about what I could grow, what types, and when I could plant them to make sure that they're done on time.
Trempolo, is that north west.
It's about 20 miles north of La Crosse.
Yeah.
So you have a short season. You're going to be growing there.
Yes.
Okay. Do you know how big he wants them?
I think he wants them as table decoration. So probably, you know, half quart size, maybe a little bit bigger.
Yeah. And you said white, though, huh?
Yes, he wants white, or that antique, you know, heritage pumpkins, something like that.
Mm. Well, if you're looking at pumpkins, there's a Cinderella pumpkin, I think it is. That's an heirloom white pumpkin. I'm pretty sure it's called a Cinderella. So if you want pumpkins, that might be a way to go. And then there's also a miniature pumpkin that is white. And then sometimes egg gourds, which is an ornamental, and it's a short season, 90-day gourd, sometimes egg gourds will come in white. You just have to look at the package and see, because sometimes egg gourds are striped, so you don't know. But a lot of times they're white, or like kind of a cream-colored. So
wonderful.
Those might work. And then for you just want to make sure you get everything in once your soil is warm. I don't know.
Yeah.
Up there, you're probably talking for sure the end of May, right?
Yeah. You could put something down, too, to kind of warm that soil up ahead of time.
True.
You know, and get it up to a good temperature.
Yeah.
Some black plastic or something like that down.
Right. What you don't want to do is transplant. They really don't like being transplanted. So, I mean, a lot of people start indoors and move them outdoors, and that's fine. But they take about a two-week shock. And so you're not having a lot of time there, it's better to just seed it and let them go.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. An email from Tina in Wazika. Gourds don't seem to be as affected by cucumber beetles or powdery mildew as other cucurbits. Is it okay to follow a cucumber patch with a gourd planting the following season?
Well, I think that would not be wise. Yeah. Cucumber beetles overwinter. There are two types, striped and spotted. One overwinters in the grass around your garden. So you always want to make sure that your grass is very short around your garden all year long. And if you spray, it's probably a good thing to spray that grass around your garden to keep those down. But the other cucumber beetles are, they come up from the south. And so you're never going to get rid of them.
Yeah.
You know, but I would not. I would not follow a cucurbit with a cucurbit at all, period.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Well, let's talk about cucumbers. I'm thinking again about last night, but at our dinner, the water was served with a little slice of cucumber in the water, and it was so good.
I'll bet. Now we're on cucumbers. Can I ask a question? Have you ever had an Armenian cucumber?
Not that I know of.
Oh my gosh. Just thinking about putting that in the water, that would be great. It's actually a member of the melon family, and it tastes like a cross between a honeydew and a cucumber. It's an heirloom cucurbit. I don't think it's a cucurbit. It's an heirloom melon.
Let me write that down again.
Yeah.
What was it?
Armenian? Yep. Grows like a cucumber, but they're long and pale, very pale. So if you're waiting for them to get green, don't, because you'll end up with 2-foot-long cucumbers. I did that the first year. But they're very, very good.
Well, I've written it down. John in Cross Plains, hello to you.
Hi. Well, I'll be looking forward to the show this weekend. I was going to guess Datura.
No. But that's a nice guess. But no.
Well, now, what is the Datura like?
I don't think Datura is a gourd.
Ah.
Moonflower?
Yeah.
Oh, moonflower. Oh, yeah, yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm looking for a gourd that is a night bloomer that is fragrant.
Okay.
And it's not something you... It's not common.
It's not common.
Not common. No. No. I mean, I've seen them, and I know people grow them in the United States, but it's not common.
Yeah, somebody else had a comment. Lois had commented, is it Diathera?
No.
No. She also had Moonflower.
But thanks for trying.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Thanks a lot for calling.
See you at the show.
Oh, man. Tom says, is it the Zucca gourd.
Zucca. No, Zucca. It's not. But I'll talk about Zucca for a second. That's an incredible gourd. We grew some last year. It's very, very tall. Very, very tall. Like as tall up to my waist. It's a very tall, slender, maybe 8 or 10 inches in diameter. Mm-hmm. 10 inches probably in diameter. And pretty much goes straight up, has just a little wiggle in the near the top in the way of a neck. They're very hard to grow. It's another 120, 140 day plant. Grows in the Southwest relatively easily, but it's always very, very thin because it puts all of its energy into that height.
Right?
So it's very thin. So last year we grew them. We had some monsters. And that's the thing about growing, you know. You look at them and you jump up and down and you do the little guard dance around them and you're just so happy. And then, you know, I just went to look at them yesterday. And two of them look like they've made it. And then about six of them
look like haven't made it.
I can use parts of them. And then one is just a pile of mush. So, you know, they're very hard to grow. But it's a beautiful gourd. It's nothing more amazing than as the plants start to die down in September, then all of a sudden you see these huge heads popping up through the leaves. They're gorgeous. Yeah, it's a nice plant.
Terry Schmidt, founder of the Wisconsin Gourd Society, self-described gourd girl, talking with us about gourds and the Wisconsin Gourd Festival coming Saturday, April 14th at the Olbrich Botanical Gardens, located on Atwood Avenue in Madison, Wisconsin. Larry Mealer here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mealer here talking gourds today on this edition of Garden Talk with Terry Schmidt, founder of the Wisconsin Gourd Society, the gourd girl, gourd guru, as far as I'm concerned. And I don't know what she does. She knows everything there is to know about gourds, believe me. Give us a call with your own questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Got a little contest going. There's a type of gourd, Terry says, that is a night bloomer, and it is really the only one that really has a great fragrance. And we've got a little contest going. She's saying, what is the gourd? She needs the Latin name. And if you win and you come to the Gourd Festival this weekend, you will get a free gourd right from Terry.
Well, from the gourd guy.
He's the gourd guy.
He'll have the gourds.
He'll have the gourds and he'll give you a gourd. Yeah. So, let's take another guess or two here. Doris in Onalaska. Hello.
Hi, Larry. I'm calling in because of that question. However, I don't have the Latin name. Hmm. I have the English name.
What do you have?
I have a snake gourd.
I need more clarification.
By the way, what's the snake gourd like? Have you talked about that yet?
I don't know if I have, but the snake gourd typically grows quite long. It can be 4 feet. The common snake gourd that mm-hmm. we know of, that's a Lagenaria, and which is a regular hard shell gourd. That is edible when it's small, in the 4 to 6 inch length. Most commonly used in art for rain sticks. That's what they were used for mostly. Yeah.
There you go. All right, Doris, thanks for calling. Charlene in Rochester, Minnesota. Hi.
Rochester, Wisconsin.
Oh, Rochester, Wisconsin. Sorry.
Well, I have the botanical name of the snake one. It's Lagenaria ciceraria or whatever.
Yeah, Lagenaria ciceraria. That's not the snake gourd that I want.
Okay, now the one that I was calling about was the evening stock, Mycelia longipetula.
Ah, nope, that's not it either. Good try, though.
So the evening scent gourd?
No evening scent gourd.
All right. We've got a Facebook from Megan. Is it the bushel basket?
It is not the bushel basket.
What are the bushel baskets? Those are the big ones?
Great bushel baskets are pretty good size. They come in different sizes, but there's a giant bushel, and then there's like a 100-day bushel. They're big. They're big, and they're just like a big basket, yeah.
And Janet on Facebook says, is it the screw pine gourd?
I have never heard of screw pine gourd. No, it's not a screw pine gourd. I'm going to look that up. But I have a book by Charles Heiser, which is called The Gourd Book, and that is essentially the gourd Bible. It's yeah. I don't know when it was published, but years ago. And he pretty much lists everything that there is to know about gourds. And, of course, in recent years, maybe there are hybrid seeds that have come out that might not be in this book. But I go by Heiser's book.
Yeah. But now you're going to be featured in a book, are you not?
I am. There's a book coming out this month, and it's due out in April, New and Different Materials for Weaving and Coiling by Marianne Barnes. Marianne Barnes is a really great basket maker and weaver and coiler on gourds. She's a phenomenal artist. And it'll be available through Amazon or all those places. And in the book, there are some projects that with instructions on how to do various coiling things. But really, it's all about unusual things that we use to coil around the tops of our gourds. So everybody uses pine needles and, mm-hmm. you know, they're typical grasses that we use. A few years ago, I grew devil's claw, which is a Southwest plant. It's a beautiful, beautiful plant. And out here, it's an annual, easy to grow. And it creates these funky claw-like pods, and I will coil those around a gourd, and it makes a very, very beautiful piece of art.
Oh.
And so I'll have a piece in the gallery in her book that is that's using devil's claw.
And you teach, I mean, you do, you have so many things going on, as a matter of fact. Your schedule, I'm looking at your schedule, it's like it's packed.
It's incredible. It
yeah.
is incredible. Yeah, there's no time for much of anything else. But I do. I teach a lot. I teach everywhere. In fact, the Monday after the festival, Monday and Wednesday, the week after the festival, I'm teaching at Cuba City High School, doing two art classes there, making masks with gourds.
Oh,
and so it's going to be very fun. It's going to be a very fun class. Yeah, but I teach at Cincinnati Mounds a lot, mm-hmm. Maybe a half a dozen classes a year at Shake Rag Alley for all of their big events and then in between. Of course, at our farm, the Wisconsin Gourd Society has patch classes, and I'll teach at the classes. I do lectures at garden clubs and organizations throughout the state. And then I'm very involved with the Wisconsin Gourd Society's public activities. So anywhere that we can get an exhibit at the Overture Center Galleries, at Monroe Center, Frainer Gallery. We have another exhibit coming up someplace. I think I put it in here.
Got it in there somewhere?
It's in red. So at McGregor, Iowa, at their art center, they contacted me this year. So over June and July, Middleton Public Library will have an exhibit in August. So we get exhibits around the state and in Iowa, and we could have some in Illinois. The Chicago Botanical Gardens is always an option for us to put in an application. So I try to get different members involved every time so that there's a good, rotation of artwork. So we have a lot going on. We have an awful lot going on.
But there's probably room for more. There could be room for more, possibly. You're looking at me like, don't say that.
Well, let's see. Doesn't this schedule goes out to October, doesn't it? Oh, my goodness, yes.
But anyway, on your website, probably you've got all this listed.
Everything is listed.
And if somebody did say, do you think you'd be able to do this workshop?
I would do it. That's why my schedule looks the way it does. Yes. Yeah.
All right. So go to the WisconsinGourdSociety.org. Actually, just go to my Facebook page. If you're there already, and I hope you're there to see the photos from the domes last night at our public radio listeners event, take a look at those and then click on the You could click on the WisconsinGourdSociety.org site and find out where Terry's involved, which is all over the place. And also, the Gourdly Quarterly.
The Gourdly Quarterly. This is
Gourdly Quarterly.
Yeah, this is our quarterly newsletter. Comes out if you're a member. You get that either online or through U.S. mail. And one thing I wanted to mention about this month or this issue is we were contacted by a woman who lives up by Appleton, I think it was, and she has a friend in Illinois. The woman's name in Illinois is Virginia Umberger, and she's 102 years old.
Oh!
And she's a Gourder, and she's been a Gourder for, I guess, 102 years or some good part of it. And she lives in Elgin, Illinois. So we did a special blurb on Virginia. Loris Damerow is the person who contacted me, and Loris is going to be a... she's going to have a booth at the festival. She's not going to sell. It's just an educational booth. And she is going to have some of Virginia's artwork there. Now, Virginia goes way back. She's one of the original members of the American Gourd Society, which is, I don't know, 70 years old or something. She knows, she worked with and knew a lot of the old Jim Story, who was a master manipulator of gourds and growing, and just a lot of the people from way back. So Virginia won't be there, but Loris is going to be there with Virginia's artwork, which I think is going to be phenomenal.
Oh,
yeah, so I'm
wonderful.
Very excited about that. So the Gourdly Quarterly comes out, obviously, every quarter, and we usually have a member highlight. So we'll highlight somebody showing their stuff, and then we have tips and techniques. And this issue, there's a lot of information on the festival and on the competition and whatnot.
Even a dinner after the festival.
There is a dinner after the festival on site at Olbrich. And it's catered, and we still have a couple of days to add people. If anybody's interested in joining us for the dinner, we'll just we have door prizes and we have fun. That's what it is.
that's what it's all about.
It's all about.
And so to get that quarterly, you need to be a member.
You do.
And you can
join at our website, WisconsinGourdSociety.org. There's a membership, I think it is, tab. Membership is $12 a year, and that basically pays for the quarterly.
Yeah.
But then also with that, you get discounts on classes and, you know,
things
activities and stuff like that. Yeah,
for $12.
Yeah.
And probably sign up at the event on Saturday.
On Saturday, our membership table will be right in the lobby, and we'll have membership packets made up and ready to hand out, so you give us your $12 and you get your membership card
right there.
Yep, exactly.
Right from the get-go.
Exactly.
Well, I tell you what, we've got, what have we got here? Here's an email from Tom. Is it Cucurbita pepo ovifera?
No. Sorry. Good try, though. Cucurbita pepos are ornamental gourds. And ovifera, I believe, would be the egg. So it would be the egg gourd. But no, that's not it.
Jim and Beloit, hi.
Hi, Larry Mueller. I really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Hi, I heard your guest mention earlier that she had moved from California. I grew up in Southern California as well. And we used to find a wild gourd about the size of a baseball. And when they're on the vine still, they're green with sort of light yellow striping. And when they were dry, they were yellow. And I was wondering if you knew what that might be. We never knew anything about it except they said it was not edible and that the American Indians in the area used to use it, the insides. They put it in with their wash and use it as bleach to bleach their clothing.
Now, I never heard that about the American Indians using it to bleach their clothing, but it is goes by two names that I know of. It's a buffalo gourd or coyote gourd, and then the more common in the Southwest, they call it the stinky gourd because it is a very stinky gourd when you open it up. So it's kind of funny that they would use it in their wash, but maybe it when it goes in with the laundry, it does something else. But and they do grow along the roadside in the Southwest and the Southern states. And they're very, very thin, very thin. So I don't know why that is, but yeah.
there you go.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks, Jim.
And as you were talking about that, Jim, Terry had a big smile on her face, and she was bobbing her head. Yeah, I remember those. I know those. Oh, boy. Bob in Chicago. Your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hi. How are you doing, Larry?
Good.
Hey, really enjoying your discussion with Terry, the gourd girl, today. And I had a guess. I'm wondering if that fragrant gourd is the Trichanthia anguina.
Trichosanthes anguina.
That's it.
It is the Trichosanthes anguina.
Which is the snake gourd, right?
It is a type of snake gourd, but it's not the Lagenaria siceraria snake gourd. It's in its own. Trichosanthes is not even a Lagenaria. It's called a snake gourd because it's very long, but it grows straight, very straight. Even without trellising, it grows very straight. Lagenaria siceraria grows, it's fat. They're usually like maybe 3 or 4 inches in diameter, and they will curl around if they grow on the ground, or you can try to grow them straight on a trellis. But the Trichosanthes is, it's very, very skinny, like 2 inches in diameter, and very, very long and straight, 5 or 6 feet tall. Now, do you know what Trichosanthes means?
I do not.
Okay, it stands for hairy flower, and it's a very interesting gourd-looking gourd flower.
It is very cool.
It's very beautiful. It looks just like a regular gourd flower, which you can look up online, a Lagenaria gourd flower, white with a yellow in the middle. But the tips of it have many, many beautiful little hairs coming off of the tips. And so it stands for hairy flower. It's from the Greek hairy flower. Yeah,
it's very
good guess.
Are you coming?
Bob.
Are you coming up to the gourd festival?
I wish I could. I apologize, but I'm from the Chicago area, and I'm just actually driving through from Minnesota. And I was listening to the program, and I have a friend that has a horse farm, and in the back of his horse farm, he has this very large pile of horse waste. It's funny because a couple of years ago, he had thrown some pumpkin seeds in it, and we got some pumpkins that must have been 150 pounds each.
Wow.
Last year, he threw in a whole bunch of different varieties of gourd seeds. And one of them had this flower, and he just called them a snake gourd. I was on the phone when the other lady had called it with a snake gourd, and that was the wrong answer, so I had to call him back and find out what the other name was. But it smelled good, and it seemed like the flowers only opened up after it turned dark. And
yep.
You know, by morning, they would be almost shut again.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. The Trichosanthes, like I said, it's the only one that has a nice fragrant smell. I think, you know, one man's trash is another man's treasure. So some people might like the smell of the regular Lagenaria. But yeah, that was a great guess. Also, Bob, if you're in the Chicagoland area, I believe it's in September at the Botanical Gardens, there's going to be an exhibit. They do, the Illinois Gourd Society puts together annually, and a gourd competition there. I'll be a judge for their competition this year. But, yes, I think they put on a pretty nice gig there. Yeah.
Thank you so much for the program today.
Yeah, thanks
for calling.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And, you know, we've got an email from Wendy who had the same answer, Trichosanthes. And I'm not sure if she's from...
Local.
But if... You know what, Wendy? I think Wendy deserves...
If you come to the festival, Wendy, you can have a gourd from the gourd guy.
Yeah, because...
And I can identify her from... Do you have who she is? Like an email or something where it came from? Do you get that?
Yeah, I think, Brittany, we got that? Yeah, Brittany.
There you go. So I'll get that after the show. And so, Wendy, you'll have to give me your email if you come, and then you can have a gourd.
Yeah, Brittany will give you the email. So we'll have
it. There you go. Good guess, Wendy.
Very good. And there was lots of guests. I'm telling you, people got into this business.
Yeah, it was fun.
I want to go back to the festival because... Okay. We hadn't talked. I know we talked about the things that are there for children, mm-hmm. but I'm not sure that we covered everything there. I I'm telling you, it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun for the kids.
It is going to be a lot of fun. One other thing that we do, and we do this every year for the kids, is they get to plant a gourd seed. We're very, very fortunate to have some great sponsors for our festival. And Livingston Seeds, which I think is out of Ohio or Iowa, I forget. But they sponsor us every year. They give us a big seed display and 300-some packets of seeds. They
wow.
give it to us to sell so that, you know, we can kind of do some fundraising. And so we're able to provide seeds for the kids to do some planting. Mm-hmm. It's very nice. So, yeah, we will have planting for the kids and then making the rattles and then this learn about gourds from the posters and some coloring and things for the little ones. Some of the vendors will do demonstrations. Some will do some wood burning, and there won't be any carving because not as a demonstration because the dust isn't really good. But there will be color and design demonstrations going on. As I mentioned before, the classes, Music in the Morning by the Old Gray Cats, which is old-time and bluegrass music. And then John Vivier and Tani Dakite will be doing African music on drumming. And Tani plays an instrument called the Ngoni. He's a great Ngoni maker.
Sounds so cool.
And Ngoni is made from a gourd. And he's, I think, Mali's most famous Ngoni maker. And then Moldy Jam in the afternoon, doing old-time and Irish and bluegrass music, our competition. And that's a lot of what's going on there.
And then, of course, we did sort of briefly mention the lectures and the technique demos, which
yep.
I think would be really
yep.
Yeah, cool
the vendors at their booths will be doing demonstrations on techniques, and then the classes, of course.
And you're obviously going to be able to purchase.
There will be gourds galore. There will be gourd art. There will be gourd product. Things for coiling and reed and color and all kinds, anything that's gourd related. Not so much tools, which is, it's sad, but you know, it's a 1 day festival. It's hard to get someone to come up for 1 day.
Yeah.
So at this point, we still don't have a big vendor for tools. Now Royal Wood is there with a lot of the round reed and stuff like that for coiling and basket making on gourds. And sometimes Royal Wood will have some tools. So
what kind of tools do you mean? Carving tools and so forth?
Yeah, carving tools. There's, you know, you can put the word gourd in front of anything and it becomes a gourd tool. So yeah, we have that. One other thing I did want to mention before the program is over is we always have a fall festival. Smaller, much smaller. It's usually on our farm. And this year, in place of our typical fall festival, we are coordinating, the Wisconsin Gourd Society is coordinating with the Midwest Basket Guild and the Iowa Basket Guild for a 2-day weekend event at Cincinnati Mound Center. And it's going to be gourds. It's called Gourds and, well, from my standpoint, it's called Gourds and Baskets in the Midwest. From their standpoint, it's called Baskets and Gourds in the Midwest. but there will be basketry classes and gourd classes going on for the entire weekend. And at Cincinnati Mounds, if you're not familiar with it, it's a beautiful historical area to go to. But they also have overnight lodging and meals available and discounts available at nearby motels if anybody wants to stay. Cincinnati is in the very southwest corner of Wisconsin, so this is going to be reachable by people in Iowa and Wisconsin and Illinois as well.
Wonderful. And again, a lot of that information or all that information is on at the WisconsinGourdSociety.org.
Yep. And also at our website, thegourdgirl.com or WisconsinGourds.com. Yep.
Always a pleasure, Terry. Thank you so much for being with us. I wish I could take you along to England. We're going, you know, this tour of England, July 1st through the 9th. We have just got an email. We have all kinds of people coming. There's still a few openings yet. So if you've been thinking about coming, flying with me to London and spending 9 days looking at the gardens of London and then southern England, bits of southern England, and seeing some of the cathedrals and all that. It's going to be so much fun. I hope you'll go to our website, wpr.org, slash Larry's Trip or slash Trip. I forget now which, and you'll get all the information. And don't forget, April 14th, Olbrich Botanical Gardens, the Wisconsin Gourd Festival with Terry Schmidt and the Gourd Guy. Yep. You'll get to see him. Does he wear a gourd hat?
No. you can't miss him. He's surrounded by gourds.
Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network.